Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here on Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the story behind the story, the news behind the news, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine just what the future will bring. We need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and if you disagree, we'd love to hear from you. Our telephone number, 464-8295, or outside the Monterey Bay calling area, but anywhere within the reach of my voice, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. But right now, we want to introduce our very special guest for the second hour of Radio Liberty, J. Michael Waller. And I had actually seen an article that he had written in the Washington Times, and it just was so to the point. I called him and I asked him if he'd be willing to come onto our program this evening, because these are the things that are not discussed on CBS or ABC or NBC ordinarily, and yet I think that we need to have people understand that America is in jeopardy today. America is in danger today. Mr. Waller, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Good to be here.
Well, why don't you explain to our listeners who you are, why you wrote the article, and then what the danger is. You know, we're told, you know, America won the Cold War. Everybody loves America now. Communism is no longer a threat. Isn't it wonderful? But is that really the truth?
Well, it's not really the truth. We had a lot of optimism and a lot of reason for optimism back in 1989 when the Soviet bloc started to unravel, and 1991 when the Soviet Union actually broke apart. But we were, I think, as a country, too optimistic, and weren't looking at some very important underlying factors, things that were remaining the same behind the changes in especially Russia, where the KGB was preserved, where the old Red Army and its traditions were preserved. Yes, they suffered from certain setbacks and financial problems and structural problems, but although the communist ideology is really not the governing force in society, unfortunately, most people in Russia still tend to think like communists, and it's going to be several generations before they get rid of that.
All right, fine. Well, now, what about their military preparedness? Because this was the basic thrust of your article, pointing out that Russia seems to be in full military production for war.
Well, their military industry is overall, it's in pretty bad shape. So what they're doing is they're channeling their scarce resources into the areas where they can literally get the biggest bang for the buck, and that's weapons of mass destruction.
But the bang you're talking about is the bang that would come about with the use of intercontinental missiles.
Yes. They view that as the least expensive and the most influential part of their military forces. And as their conventional forces continue to deteriorate, which they are relying more heavily than ever, even more heavily than under the Soviet times, on nuclear missiles. So what they've done is there's been a great publicity campaign here where our president says at practically every speech that this is the first time since the dawn of the nuclear age where not a single Russian missile is pointed at the children of America. He said that in more than 48 speeches over the past year and a half. Yet that's really not true, because the obsolete weapons that the United States is paying to destroy in the former Soviet Union are being replaced by new, super modern, far more accurate and far more survivable systems. So the former Red Army will be relying on some of the equipment being more high-tech than anything the United States has as a core of its military might, and they want to use that to be able to reassert themselves when their country gets back on its feet.
Well, now, didn't you say that one reason they were dismantling the SS-18s and some of these older missiles was their lifespan was gone? I mean, they would only last a certain period of time, and they'd already to the point where they were no longer really safe or effective. So this was the normal time to destroy them anyway, was that?
Right. Yes. The Russian military was destroying many of these weapons on its own. They had decided that keeping an arsenal the size that the Soviet Union had was simply not possible for them under their terrible economic situation. So they needed to have a smaller nuclear force. That's why the Russian military leadership supports the START II treaty the way it does and is trying to convince the communists and the nationalists that just because the United States wants the treaty doesn't mean it's bad for Russia. What they view is that they're forcing the United States to reduce the size of its nuclear forces, even though the United States has decided as a matter of policy not to modernize. So Russia is also reducing its overall size, yet modernizing what strategic arsenal it's keeping. They decided to do that because they still maintain a great suspicion and a great resentment toward the United States, and they still view themselves as a world power, and they have not, again, gotten rid of the Soviet mentality that has taken over their whole culture.
Well, now, one of the points, as I recall from your article, was the fact that they have renounced the concept of no first military strike. Initially, that was they said, you know, we will not attack first, and suddenly they've denounced that or renounced that concept, so that the potential for a Soviet first strike is certainly accepted by their military. Is that correct?
Yes, that's part of their formal military doctrine since 1993, after Yeltsin sent the army and the KGB to pound the parliament. In the fight with Parliament, actually, I was there in Moscow, and I watched the shelling and shooting up of Parliament right from the street. And then to hear the president, to be an American in Moscow, and to hear the president of the United States come out and endorse that carnage that took place was just horrifying. But the military came to Yeltsin's aid at the last minute, and as a quid pro quo, Yeltsin had to sign this new aggressive military doctrine, which he has supported fully and is allowing the military to press forward with.
And now we have a military doctrine that says we will not strike first, and the Russians have a military doctrine that says we can strike first. That doesn't seem like a very equitable balance of a military strategy.
No, and particularly since we're pumping billions of dollars worth of cash into their financial system every year in an attempt to prop up their economy. The U.S. government has made no attempt to leverage our economic support of their economic reforms with some sort of military reform.
Well, now, we understand, of course, that they're taking the missiles out of the ground in Ukraine and transferring them to Russia.
Right.
We've had Mr. Sven Kramer as our guest on the program. I don't know if you know Sven.
I work in the next office from him.
All right, but he says that, we're told that they're dismantling the missiles, but we've never had any, we've never seen them dismantle a missile. I mean, we've seen them blow up the one or two silos, but we can't document that they're really dismantling the missiles, although they were giving them tens of millions of dollars or billions of dollars to do it.
Right. In fact, we renounced the right, actually it was President Bush who renounced the right for us to be able to account for the nuclear warheads that they have.
Why would that be? Does that just show how much we trust them?
I really don't understand their thinking. I think, I know President Bush put great stock in Mikhail Gorbachev, and then when Gorbachev was overthrown, he put great stock in Yeltsin, and the Russians were so adamant that we Americans not inspect what they're doing with their missiles that we just caved into them.
Well, now,
and
what
the
about
the administration kept that?
Do we allow them to inspect what we're doing?
No, and that was part of the point. Our military correctly thought, you know, we don't want the Russian military snooping around our nuclear facilities, so we're not going to allow it because the Russians insisted on mutual inspections. But the thing is, it wasn't the United States that had its hand out. It wasn't the Russians that were pumping our economy full of money. So any talk of mutual inspections is absolutely absurd. We should have said, if you're going to request and accept our financial assistance and our other support to help your country recover, then you've got to stop your nuclear programs and you have to let us in and monitor the fact that you're dismantling everything. We never insisted on that.
Well, this...
And there was a point in 1991 and 1992 that with some creative leadership from this side, we could have pressured them to open up and let us inspect their programs.
But it seems that we never have men with hair on their chest. That's a sort of a figure of speech, but guys who say this is the way that it is. A Teddy Roosevelt, a man who says, we're not going to just make any concession to you. These are our terms, and this is the way that it is, or else. And it's always, well, what can we do to accommodate you? Now,
yeah.
One of the things that disturbs me quite a bit from your article was the fact you talked about the mobile missiles that they're creating, the intercontinental ballistic mobile missiles that could be tipped with either nuclear or chemical or biological warheads, but we have nothing comparable.
That's right. We've decided not to do that. The Russians have decided to go ahead and do it, and we're not protesting that because we say, well, that's legal under the treaties that we've signed with them.
Now, we're actually dismantling our Minuteman, and are we dismantling our Peacekeeper missiles as well? How much of a force are we going to have when we get all through?
Not much of one, particularly when you have more and more countries developing nuclear missiles.
And what about China? I mean, if Russia, even if Russia were disarming and we were disarming, what does that do as far as our relationship with communist China, which has already threatened to take out Los Angeles?
Right. It says a lot. I mean, we're at a point now where the our energy secretary, Hazel O'Leary, has shut down some of the facilities that we need simply to maintain the current stocks that we have, let alone modernize them or build new more stable and more safer systems as these deteriorate. So we've really put ourselves in a very difficult situation because so many political leaders in Washington are so extremely short-sighted, and many others are simply naive about problems in the real world.
Well, of course, when Pearl Harbor came, we had time to build up Fortress America. The next war may be over in a week, and if we are ill-prepared, there's only one thing worse than fighting a war, and that's losing a war. And so our attitude is, war is unthinkable, but that isn't the attitude of our enemies. They believe, in fact, aren't they really building all those underground facilities all over Russia and all over China in preparation for what they believe may well be a nuclear war? And before you answer that, we're going to have to take a break here. Let me mention that our guest this evening is J. Michael Waller from Washington, D.C. Our telephone number, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Give us a call if you have a question. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and we want to talk to you about a few of the items that we have which we think you should be getting hold of. And, of course, we have put together here at Radio Liberty a set of our tapes, four tape sets, dealing with either interviews that we've done or very worthwhile tapes or interviews that other people have done. We have a set of tapes called the China Tapes, and if you haven't heard them, you really should. There are two talks that were given by Reverend Leslie Millen about 35 years ago. He was in China at the time of the communist takeover. And it gives you a tremendous understanding of the mentality of the people in China back in 1947 and 1948 as the Chinese communist troops were advancing from the north and the Chiang Kai-shek's troops were retreating because they didn't have any weapons to fight with because of the policies of the American State Department. And then there's a wonderful interview with General Albert Wedemeyer, grand old man. In fact, he is the individual who's depicted in Herman Wouk's The Winds of War, where Robert Mitchum plays the general who's going to the White House to have dinner with FDR and Winston Churchill. And that really was a man. His name was General Albert Wedemeyer. And I had a wonderful opportunity to spend several weekends with him. And this is my interview with General Wedemeyer as he tells the background behind the fall of China to communism. Another interview with Otto Otepka, who's chief of security for the State Department. The China Tapes, must listening for anybody who would like to understand what's going on in America today. And then, of course, our four tapes, Is There a Secret Government, an interview with Professor Carol Quigley. There's no other interview that I know of available in America with Professor Quigley, but we have that interview. As you remember, this was the professor that Bill Clinton talked about when he accepted the Democratic nomination for the presidency and attributed his vision for America first to President Kennedy, and then when he was at Georgetown University, he heard that summons to citizenship clarified by a professor named Carol Quigley. Carol Quigley then will tell you about his history, studies about a secret society, or at least a society that he had uncovered that had an intention of changing our world. The Carol Quigley tapes, unavailable. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Ask for the China tapes. Ask for Is There a Secret Government? Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Now. This is Dr. Stan back here on Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, J. Michael Waller. Our subject, what's really going on as far as the military situation in the world. And you know, one of the things that bothers me, Mr. Waller, is that as I watch television, CBS, ABC, NBC, as I read the major publications other than usually the Washington Times, I don't see any of the things that you're talking about being emphasized or mentioned. There was an article, I understand, in this month's Reader's Digest, which you wrote and I didn't have a chance to get, but most of the media doesn't seem to be telling us these things that you're trying to warn us of.
Well, yeah, they don't really focus on it, and if they do print something, it either comes in bits and pieces, or once in a while it's buried on either on the opinion page or deep within an article. But one of the things we do at the American Foreign Policy Council, where I'm vice president in Washington, it's a private organization, is we go through news agencies from around the world every day, as well as from different American publications, and we pull out what we feel are the most important items reported that matter to our own country's national security, and we summarize those in some daily bulletins we have for decision makers and people in the news media. But so it's really a full-time job just to keep track of these things, and when you see how especially the press outside Washington doesn't cover issues and is so superficial of many of these issues, it's no surprise that people around the country just don't know what's happening in the world around them.
Well, that old adage that 2% of the people make it happen, 5% watch it happen, and the other 93% don't even know anything's happening is so true today. How can people get access to this sort of information? Is there any way that Radio Liberty would be able to get access to what you're finding out about what's going on across America?
Sure,
the world?
We could put you on our list, but as far as a listener to go, we have a if they have a computer, we have a site on the World Wide Web. If you'd like that computer address.
All right, why don't you give that? Maybe I can get on your fax list and our listeners can get on the World Wide Web.
Okay, it's www.afpc.org.
That doesn't sound hard. That's www.afpc, that's for the American Foreign Policy Council, .org. Is that all?
Right. That's right.
That's easy enough to pull down. And do you have support? Are you funded by foundations? Do you have members of the American Foreign Policy Council? How are you funded?
By private contributions from individuals and foundations.
Fine. Do you have a telephone number you'd like to give out?
Sure. It's area code 202-462-6055.
All right, that's 202-462-6055, and we'll try to give that again here, because I think this is a good organization, especially if you're just right next door to Mr. Sven Kramer. I've only talked to Mr. Kramer on one previous occasion, but I met his dad many, many years ago, his father, Fritz Kramer, back in 1980. In fact, at the same time, I was interviewing General Albert Wedemeyer, and I'll never forget General Wedemeyer asked where I'd been that day, and I mentioned Fritz Kramer. He went out, and he checked him out to make sure he was all right. And he came back, and he said, oh, yes, Fritz Kramer, Dr. Kramer is very well thought of. And of course, because his son was with the National Security Council, I guess the better part of 20 years. So certainly well aware of what's going on. Well, you know, the problem we have here on the West Coast is, how do you get the news? I mean, we try, and for our listeners who listen to our program regularly, we feel that they're getting a pretty good cross-section of what's going on. But for the average individual who reads Time Magazine and U.S. News and World Report and their local newspaper, they have no idea of the very real danger that I believe we're facing. In fact, Mr. Kramer, Sven Kramer, when he was a guest on our program, you know, was concerned about a Pearl Harbor or a surprise attack, or at least the possibility of that, or nuclear blackmail. Do you see these things as real possibilities?
Well, yes, but I see definitely nuclear blackmail, and I think that's practiced on us far more than we care to think about, even in Washington. For example, it was a couple of months ago, the Minister of Atomic Energy of Russia, he's in charge of their entire nuclear weapons program, gave a drunken interview to the Washington Post, swearing that he was going to launch nuclear weapons against our NATO allies if we included other countries into the alliance. And that's just one small example. And then, of course, you had the Chinese make that threat to an emissary for the American National Security Advisor in January, telling him that that the United States better not come to the aid of Taiwan, because surely the United States values Los Angeles much more than it values Taiwan, which was a direct nuclear threat on Los Angeles. So this blackmail takes place much more often than we think.
Well, but if there's smoke, there's fire. If there's the potential for this, does China have any sort of a defense against nuclear missiles? We know that Russia's been certainly has a massive civil defense program. But let's just take Russia first of all. It's my understanding, and you correct me if I'm wrong, they have a massive civil defense program. They have all of these underground bunkers, and they have been working on an anti-missile system. And there's a serious question whether they may have that functional. Is there any truth to that?
Yes, they maintain, and they're actually expanding, a network of 1,600 nuclear-proof bunkers around the country. The subway systems of all of the major cities are huge civil defense shelters, and many of them are quite far underground. There are also separate networks of tunnels and subways for the leadership, and then it was, as the Russian press has been reporting, but I believe it was the New York Times reported a few weeks ago, at Yamantau Mountain in the Ural Mountains, they're building a huge underground nuclear-proof command bunker that is larger, just the underground portion, is larger than all of Washington, D.C., and the Maryland and Northern Virginia parts inside the beltway around the city of Washington, D.C. It's an absolutely huge complex. Now, why they're still building this, one can only speculate. Unfortunately, some of the leaders in our government say, "Oh, it's just inertia from the old Cold War," or "it's it doesn't matter," or "it's not as bad as we think." But really, if you look at their military doctrine, these people these generals who got their general stars under the Red Army, are obsessed with this Cold War mentality and do believe that they can fight and survive a nuclear war.
But the thing is that, they're supposedly so poor. We've got to give them all this money. We've given them something like $100 billion since the Berlin Wall came down, and we'd given them another 50 or 75 billion before that. If they're so poor,
the West as a whole,
right? Well, yeah. if they're really so poor, why are they investing all this money in underground bunkers and in updating their nuclear capacity?
I don't know. It's absolutely insane. Here you have Russia, where its life expectancy is declining, so that an adult male, or a life expectancy now for a male, is 57 years. And in some Russian cities, the life expectancy is only 40, 42, 43 years of age. You have huge health problems. The country can't feed itself, even though it has wonderfully rich agricultural land. The country can't bring in revenues or even provide itself with some of its own energy needs, even though it sits on the largest reserves of oil and natural gas in the world. They have the world's largest gold reserves and diamond reserves and timber. It's an incredibly rich country, yet the government and the leaders are squandering all their resources, as well as their human resources, and pensioners are just thrown out on the street, yet they're pouring what little money they have into these foolish military programs and weapons of mass destruction and nuclear survivability shelters. It's really difficult for us as Americans to understand why this is happening in 1996. It doesn't seem real.
Unless winning in the Cold War is more important than the welfare of their people.
Certainly.
Okay, let's go to Lois. Hi, Lois.
Hi. I was wondering if you knew what Russia and the United States might be doing out in outer space.
With the space station?
Yes. In other words, she's wondering if you know what Russia and the United States are doing in outer space. Do you know anything about that?
I'll hang up.
Okay. Well, the space programs, you know, on the surface, it's a simple scientific program, and there's supposedly an international consortium to build a space station based in large part on the Russian space station that's already up there. But unfortunately, a lot of the Russian space program is run by their military. They have a service called the Military Space Forces, where their view toward space, we look at it in a scientific way. They view it as a new military frontier. And in fact, it's the military space forces that have been launching some of the strategic nuclear missile tests over the past 5 years. In fact, they made one launch last September of a new prototype intercontinental ballistic missile called Topol-M. And that successful test was run by the military space forces, and it's the military space forces that are also running much of this space station program that we're pouring money into.
Okay, so we keep giving them money, and they keep preparing for war, and we keep unilaterally disarming. Now, what about their anti-ballistic missile system? We know that they had one around Moscow. Have they continued to expand that? Because there was a question, there was some big radar base out in Siberia before the Berlin Wall came down, and it was suggested that that was going to be used to sort of coordinate an anti-ballistic missile system in case of a nuclear retaliation on them. What's the background of that?
At Krasnoyarsk.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I don't follow that exact system, but what I do understand from those who do is that they maintain anti-ballistic missile systems in violation of the 1972 treaty they have with us, the anti-ballistic missile, the ABM treaty. And in fact, every time the Senate takes up a vote on whether or not we should build our own defense against ballistic missiles, the Russian government raises a terrible cry, saying that if the United States does that, that's a sign of America's aggressive intent, and Russia will back out of its other treaties it has with us. From what I'm told, Russia has a fleet of aircraft fleet across the country of jets that can fly high up into the atmosphere and fire canisters up into space to intercept warheads. And this is a country-wide anti-ballistic missile system, in addition to the anti-nuclear missile system that they have around Moscow. And they also have a missile system that fires nuclear charges up above the atmosphere to in the path of incoming warheads. So they have, and also last November, in fact, Russia and Ukraine signed 26 military cooperation agreements, at least one of which was to allow Russia to use the radar systems in Ukraine for an anti-ballistic missile defense. So here, while the United States, as the Senate did last week, the Senate filibuster killed the attempt to pass a law to deploy an anti-ballistic missile system in the United States within 7 years. The Russians are still going ahead with their own program.
And it would.
And I would say also something unusual. the Senate filibuster.
I'm going to have to interrupt you there. We're going to be back in just a moment here on Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and we want to tell you about some of the items that we have, which we hope that you'll want to get. We have, of course, an excellent selection of videos. One of them is put out by Citizens for Honest Government, Pat Matriciana, and it covers what's been going on in Arkansas at Mena Airport, the strange death of two boys on the railway track, and then the subsequent murder of six people who were, in one way or another, covered or associated with the cover-up of the original two boys. Obstruction of justice is one of the real great investigative jobs. You won't see anything about this on CBS, ABC, or NBC, but they actually name who it was who was responsible and his position in government, and his name is Mr. Dan Harmon. He was the chief prosecutor for Saline County in Arkansas, just adjacent to Little Rock. An amazing story, obstruction of justice, and of course Mr. Dan Harmon is about to be indicted now that Governor Huckabee has taken over, that Jim Guy Tucker has been convicted. So with a Republican and actually a Baptist minister in a position of governor in Arkansas, we may begin to see some cleaning up of the tragic situation there. And it will be in large part due to this video, unavailable at your local video stores, but available here from Radio Liberty, entitled Obstruction of Justice. And then, of course, there is the very excellent videos, Clinton Chronicles, The Death of Vince Foster, Oklahoma City, What Really Happened, AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, and I think we have one more copy of Waco, one story on the video on the boys we left behind. It's called, I think it's called The Boys We Left Behind. It's the story of the POWs were abandoned by your government in Vietnam. So all of these videos, along with a number of tape sets dealing with AIDS, outcome-based education, is there a war on drugs, is there a secret government, the China tapes, all are available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. The very excellent talk on geopolitics, the talk on population control, the talk on secret societies, the talk I gave back in Washington, D.C. Last December, along with a bibliography to document the background of the findings of Professor Carol Quigley, formerly of the Georgetown Foreign Service School and the mentor of William Jefferson Clinton. All of these are available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our telephone number, 464-8295, or outside the Santa Cruz dialing area, but anywhere within the reach of my voice, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, our guest, Mr. Michael J. Michael Waller. And we're talking about pretty what's happening. Of course, the Russians say if we want to put in a defense against nuclear missiles, we must have an aggressive tendency, and yet the Russians apparently have already deployed a multi-tiered defense against nuclear missiles. Now, this really is sort of a frightening scenario when you're dealing with people who look at the world through different eyes and who really believe that nuclear war is survivable. Certainly the attitude in America has always been nuclear war is not survivable, so we're not even going to try to survive. No civil defense, no defense at all for America. If an attack comes, we will just let all of our people be incinerated, the mutual assured destruction. But if they have a defense, it won't be mutual, will it?
No, not at all. And the other thing you're talking about, too, is what if somebody on his own is able to launch a missile? I mean, there's where the whole theory of mutual assured destruction fails, because this is a single launch aimed at a single site in the United States, and if the Russian government didn't order that command, then against who is there to retaliate? So there are all these other variables now that the nuclear arsenals at some point may be up for grabs.
Well, I understand that we have given Russia permission to sell the booster rockets for intercontinental ballistic missiles to countries like Libya and Iraq and Iran and Syria and maybe even North Korea and China in the name of, well, they could use it to put up satellites. They're really interested in putting satellites up in space. This seems to me like insanity.
Yeah, and these are mobile missiles too. These are the ones mounted on trucks like Scud. Remember in the Persian Gulf War, Allied forces flew 5,000 sorties over Iraq just to find the Scuds, and they couldn't locate a single Scud on its launcher. So if you consider if with the whole world having these so-called space launchers with warheads on them, it's quite alarming. Now, this was a deal that the Clinton administration struck with the Russians last September. The Russians demanded this. The Clinton administration agreed to it. Then the following day, the Clinton administration agreed that the United States would not be allowed to pursue a similar program.
A similar program?
Meaning we would allow the Russians to sell their missiles abroad as space launchers, but we would forbid ourselves to do the same, if we ever had the desire to.
I see. Well, that certainly makes sense.
There's something really strange that was reported last week, and also in the Washington Times. There's a fellow named Steven Steiner. He's the key official in charge of making sure that Russia complies with the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty, the START Treaty. And he was recently awarded the Nadiradze Medal in Russia. Now, the Nadiradze Medal is named after a famous Soviet nuclear missile designer, and it was bestowed upon Mr. Steiner by Lev Solomonov, who's head of the Votkinsk Missile Design Bureau, and he's the chief designer of the Russian SS-25 mobile intercontinental ballistic missile.
Now, is this...
And the medal was given to him for his work in, quote, making a remarkable contribution to the progress of Russian rocket technologies.
Now, this is an American?
This is an American government official appointed by the President of the United States whose job it is to make sure that Russia is complying with its Strategic Arms Control Treaty with the United States.
Well, you might wonder what his contribution was to the Soviet Union. That would be sort of like Henry Ford getting the Legion of Merit from Adolf Hitler, and similar in many other respects as well, or whatever he got. He got the Iron Cross. Henry Ford got the highest medal that any foreign dignitary could get. Don't we have some sort of law against people taking or government employees getting medals from foreign countries?
Apparently not. Or I do know anyway that when, for example, our military goes to the defense of a friendly country, oftentimes that friendly country will bestow medals on the American officers, and there, for example, Secretary of Defense Caspar Weinberger got an honorary British knighthood from Queen Elizabeth and so forth. But now you see Russia's a friendly country, so that goes in this category, so at least according to the people in the White House, that's nothing unusual and there's nothing wrong with it.
But if Russia's a friendly country, why is the KGB operating here? Why is all the espionage going on if they're really a friendly country?
Right. Well, this is one of the problems. And if you look all around the world, and countries that have never, ever been very strong toward, say, standing up to Moscow, like Sweden and other of the Scandinavian countries, and then certain NATO allies, France, Germany, Britain, Spain, Turkey, the Netherlands, Belgium, Canada, all of these countries have expelled Russian espionage agents over the past 4 or 5 years since the Soviet Union collapsed. They haven't been shy about it. When they've uncovered these cases, they've thrown the people out. Just 2 weeks ago in Canada, there was a case where they discovered 2 deep cover Russian agents who were planted in Canada during the perestroika period. They assumed false identities, taking the names of 2 deceased Canadian children, and they were building new identities there as Canadians. The Canadian authorities discovered them and threw them out of the country a week ago. Yet, when the United States discovers an Aldrich Ames, a high, high-level, deep penetration of the core of the Central Intelligence Agency, who caused billions of dollars worth of damage to our country's intelligence and got 10 of our agents killed, the President of the United States said virtually nothing. Bill Clinton did almost nothing and just, in a pro forma way, asked one Russian embassy official to leave. And then when the Senate, led by Bob Dole, in fact, it was a bipartisan group, but it was led by Bob Dole, right after the Ames scandal, called on President Clinton to freeze aid to Russia until we could determine first whether or not this might be a leftover operation from the Cold War, and second, maybe the Russians would help us clear up this case and other spy cases against us. You kind of laugh at the naivete of that, and it sounds pretty stupid. And those of us who were watching the KGB at the time certainly knew better, but at least they had a point. And Bill Clinton did nothing, and in fact, just a few weeks after Aldrich Ames was arrested, President Clinton personally pushed for the International Monetary Fund to send $1.5 billion in cash to the Russian Central Bank.
Well, you know where his loyalties really stand. And that may be a terrible thing to say, but if you ever read the book Clinton Confidential, written by George Carposi, that goes into Bill Clinton's trip to Moscow during the Vietnam War, is, disapprove of Vietnam, it was another thing to want the Russians to win, the communists to win.
Yeah.
That is inexcusable. And, of course, after he left Moscow, then he went to Czechoslovakia to stay with the family of the head of the Czechoslovakian Communist Party. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. This is Dr. Stan here on Radio Liberty, and we've been telling you about, the book by George Carposi, Clinton Confidential. And Mr. Carposi's an excellent author. He's written biographies of everybody from John Wayne to Marilyn Monroe to Cary Grant, and he was the biographer of the stars, well-known. All of his books sold well until he wrote a book on the biography of Bill Clinton. And, of course, because he dared to go into many of the secrets behind Bill Clinton that you'll never read in any of the other books, and because he began to talk about the relationship between William Blythe Jefferson Clinton and his professor at Georgetown University, Professor Carol Quigley, that book just won't sell. And I've talked to George Carposi, and they just can't get the book out. In fact, Bob Dornan told me about it, Congressman Dornan, and told me they couldn't get the book out, so we bought a supply of them, and we've been trying to move them. It's an important book, and if you have never read it, it's the one biography of Bill Clinton that you won't find at any of your local bookstores. You will not find it reviewed. Clinton Confidential, an amazing, amazing revelation about the man who today occupies the White House on Pennsylvania Avenue. Well, we have other unusual books. We have a series of books dealing with the spiritual aspect of the battle that we're involved in today. We are now carrying The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, written by Constance Cumby, a book that certainly influenced my entire attitude towards what's going on. Out of the 8,000 to 10,000 books we have here in the library, we haven't counted them in a long time. We gave up at 5,000. And I'm sure there's probably 10,000 books now, but this, I would say, is in one of the top 10 books. The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow goes into the background of the Theosophical movement and what the New Agers refer to as the Aquarian Conspiracy. And you'll be amazed to find the people that Marilyn Ferguson, the high goddess of the Aquarian Conspiracy, the people in Washington, D.C. that she names having identical philosophies to that of the other New Agers. In fact, some of these people hold key positions and advisory positions in the defense establishment today. Little wonder we're having problems. The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow by Constance Cumby, a new book we're carrying. Hitler and the New Age by Bob Rosio. Certainly The New World Order, The Ancient Plan of Secret Societies by William Still. and The Demonic Side of Globalism by Gary Kaw. All of these books available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Okay, well, Dr. Stan back here on Radio Liberty, and our telephone number here, if you'd like to call in, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and we'd love to hear from you. If you have a question, you have a comment, you agree, you disagree. And our guest this evening is J. Michael Waller. He's from the American Foreign Policy Council back in Washington, D.C., and there's certainly a conservative think tank that's looking at what's transpiring and trying to inform the American people about what we are not reading in our newspaper. And, of course, Mr. Waller wrote an excellent article in the Washington Times, what was the 10th or 11th of this month, just a couple of days ago. And then, of course, his article this month in the Reader's Digest. What is that article in the Reader's Digest about?
It's called To Russia with Cash, and it's a look at our aid programs to Russia, and how, you know, most of the American people intended one thing, they've been given another. Basically, what it does, it shows how the Bush administration didn't give it a very good start, but secondly, the Clinton administration has just made a bad thing worse by, one would argue charitably, that they were inadvertently propping up corrupt, very often militaristic and subversive, and at times even openly communist elements in our aid programs. And there's a good example of this where two National Security Council figures, Toby Gotti and Nick Burns, are alleged by our former ambassador to Belarus. This is Ambassador David Swartz, who was our first American ambassador to the former Soviet Republic of Belarus. And he's a 28-year Foreign Service officer, so he's a veteran of the diplomatic corps, and he resigned in protest in January 1994 because the United States government was deliberately supporting the most hardcore communist elements in Belarus. He wrote a story about this last winter, and I interviewed him at length, and he's in the Reader's Digest story now. But the head of the parliament of Belarus, who was the country's top reformer, kept pleading for American assistance, and Ambassador Swartz was trying to get it to him. But the Agency for International Development kept sending it to these hardcore communists who wanted nothing to do with Western-style reforms, and Ambassador Swartz kept sending cables to Secretary of State Warren Christopher, to Deputy Secretary of State Strobe Talbot, and to the chief of the Agency for International Development, saying, please help these guys and stop helping the communists.
Gee, I wonder why it's so insistent upon helping the communists in Russia.
It's really hard to say, but Ambassador Swartz gave two examples of how two people in the White House, again, he named them Toby Gotti and Nick Burns. Nick Burns is now State Department spokesman, and Toby Gotti is now chief of the Department of Intelligence and Research at the State Department. And they deliberately channeled this aid to the communists.
Well, either they're awfully stupid or they really want the communists to survive. In fact, my understanding is that in most of the independent states in Russia, although initially the reformers tried to get in, eventually the communists were able to take control in each one of the independent states, so that today every one of the independent states is headed by a so-called ex-communist.
Yeah, sure. The president of Ukraine used to be the head of the Soviet Union's largest nuclear missile factory.
Right.
You know, the president of Russia and his foreign minister were both on the Communist Party Politburo. The president of Kazakhstan was on the Communist Party Politburo. The president of Tajikistan was on the Politburo. And so on and so on. It's really, and we call this reform.
Right. Well, at least we're trying to convince the American people it's reform. Now, one of the things that really disturbed me when we talked to Mr. Kramer, he kept talking about the Russians are building all these attack or killer submarines. He didn't use the word killer, but an attack submarine is designed to kill nuclear submarines, isn't it?
Right, to attack naval ships and our nuclear missile subs.
Now, why do you think Russia is in full production, and she's putting out a lot of these new attack submarines, and is trying to determine how they can track our submarines. Do you think that they might possibly be planning on destroying our nuclear submarines, which might very well be the only vehicle we would have to retaliate in case of a nuclear attack?
Yes, yes, they've said as much. In fact, the vice commander of the Russian Navy spoke at a conference in London about 5 weeks ago. It was April 30th. And he was asked, what are the Russian Navy's top priorities for the next decade? And he answered it quite frankly. He said, our priorities are to build a more modern fleet of ballistic missile-firing submarines and a more modern fleet of attack submarines. He was very clear about it.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, we can't even get our Congress to build two more attack submarines.
But that's because we are giving so much money to Russia. In other words, we don't have the money to build submarines here because we're giving the money to the Soviet Union. So, actually, we're putting our money into submarines. It's just that somebody else is building them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, since the Soviet collapse, Russia has built 13 brand new Severodvinsk attack submarines, in addition to the Akula 2 that they continue to build.
How many nuclear submarines have they built since the so-called collapse of Russia?
Oh, I'm not a Navy expert, so I don't know the exact number,
right,
but I know
quite a few.
Ambassador Richard Starr up at the Hoover Institution has a wonderful article out in the summer issue of Orbis, which is a journal published out of Philadelphia, and he outlines all of this in very stark terms. He also has a new book out on the Russian military, published by the Naval Institute Press, goes over the 10 myths of the post-Soviet armed forces. It's a fantastic book.
I'll have to call you off the air and get that information. I'm going to have to take our last break here, and when we come back, we'll be back with Mr. Waller. And if you'd like to give us a call, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. This is Dr. Stan here on Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Mr. J. Michael Waller of the American Foreign Policy Council. And we've been talking about seemingly unexplainable things that are going on in our society, but they're really not unexplainable if you understand what the agenda is of the internationalists who work within the power centers in America. And so many of these are dedicated to this dream that if we're just nice enough to our enemies, we can all merge together into one big happy world government. Kerry Kaw's excellent book, En Route to Global Occupation, the story of the move towards the new world government. The New World Order, The Ancient Plan of Secret Societies by William Still, an excellent overview of the plan, the long-range plan for this world government concept. Certainly, the book Freedom on the Altar by William Grigg traces this movement from the time of the French Revolution, even before that, really, from the time of the Renaissance and the Enlightenment right up to the present day, and how it interlocks with our foundations and many of our great and powerful organizations, but intent upon the surrender of American sovereignty to this world government. And lastly, Global Tyranny, Step by Step by William Jasper, an excellent overview using the quotations from the people who have been writing and talking about the necessity for world government for the last two generations. All of these books are available, and you really need to read and become educated today. All available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Now. Okay, this is Dr. Stan here on Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, J. Michael Waller of the American Foreign Policy Council. And we're talking about what's happening militarily in America, what's happening militarily in the world. And I understand that America is actually cutting back on the number of operational bombers we have. We're doing away with our B-52s.
Yes, and of course our B-1 fleet is not fully operational because of some manufacturing or metal fatigue problems that they have. So, and we we have a very small fleet of B-2s, so we really don't have much of a bomber fleet anymore.
Oh, now, what about our missiles? We have no mobile missiles. How do we have any idea how many of the Minutemen? We used to have 1,000 Minutemen, and then we had another 100, I believe, the Peacekeepers, the 10-megaton missiles. And the missiles that we have now, are they really operational since we're no longer getting any upgraded plutonium to replace the nuclear material in the warheads?
Well, I can't answer that. I spend more time watching the Russians than I do watching myself, although sometimes I think the question might be academic given what our own leaders are doing to us. Well, I know we don't have the ability to manufacture certain compounds needed to maintain our warheads, but again, not being a scientist in this area, I don't want to comment anymore.
Well, it almost seems that we're unilaterally disarming in the face of, at least from a strategic point of view, a massive buildup on the part of the Russians. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, right now the Russian buildup is not yet massive, just because they don't have the resources to become massive yet. But then neither did the Germans in the Weimar Republic. They needed time to get back on their feet, and of course they had Henry Ford there building the factories for them. In fact, in 1939, the biggest tank manufacturer in Germany was the Ford Motor Company.
It's amazing.
So today now you have Honeywell, you have Bechtel, you have a number of defense firms, American defense and high technology firms over there supplying avionics. Pratt & Whitney is providing jet engines to the Russian company that builds their strategic airlift aircraft, and we have a number of high-tech American companies going over there supposedly for civilian purposes. But the problem is these same factories or enterprises are also the backbone of Russia's military industry.
Well, it's an amazing, amazing story. I want to thank you so much for being our guest here on Radio Liberty this evening and sharing this information with our listeners. And this will certainly be a tape of the month, and we'll be distributing it all over the country. Thank you so much for being with us this evening, and I hope I can call on you sometime in the future.
Anytime.
You can keep us up to date with what's going on, and I may call you off the air to try to get onto your fax list so we can keep our listeners abreast of what you're talking about. So thank you so much for being back in Washington, D.C., and keeping an eye, because somebody's got to inform the public, and if you get the information, we'll help you to get it out.
Great.
Good night, and God bless you, sir.
Good night. You too.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, this was J. Michael Waller, and, you know, that's an amazing, amazing story. And you're not going to hear this elsewhere, so we want to remind you that Radio Liberty is supported by people just like you. If you agree that our message is important and needs to get out across America, we'd love to hear from you. Our address is Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. And if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters for a gift of $20 or more a month, why, we'll be glad to send you the four best tapes of the month and simply ask that you go ahead and copy them and help us to get them out far and wide across America. And then, of course, we want to thank those in the past who have contributed so generously to Radio Liberty and to ask for your continued prayers for our provision and for our protection, because behind this battle, behind this political battle, behind this military battle, there are dark and sinister spiritual forces. And so it is until, tomorrow at the same time, and actually for those of you listening here on the West Coast, until after the news, this is Dr. Stan saying goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.